Hello and welcome to Take Off, Points and Miles podcast by 10X Travel. I'm your host, Bryce Conway. Today, I'm happy to say that we have a full boat here, joined by Matt, Travis, and Emily. How's everyone doing today?
Doing great. Nice to have the full crew.
Doing well. Yeah, doing good.
Yeah, happy spring. It's finally starting to warm up here in Ohio. And by that, I mean it's like over 45 degrees. Travel season is ramping back up. Flowers are blooming all as well.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm stoked. You know, obviously, we record these before they go live. And this weekend is our...
I think you'd have to do that.
I mean, we live stream this.
Okay, you know? Okay. Look, it's not summer. I don't need to catch any shade yet. I'm stoked we've got our first reader meetups of the year this weekend in Houston and Chicago. Obviously, by the time you're hearing this, those will have been passed, but we've got some more throughout the country. Bryce just said nice weather, and it's just going to be crisp and perfect and not too
and not
hot.
100 degrees.
Not 100 degrees. That's the important part. So I'm excited for it.
Yeah.
So nice. Because these are delayed, are we allowed to talk about the ending of White Lotus season 3 now? Like, people
Again,
have a couple
no.
weeks.
I still have two episodes left. No.
I still have all of the episodes left.
Yeah, every catch up on season 1 and 2 first.
Yeah.
All right. Well, scratch that idea.
Yeah. Shut down.
Well, I think I mentioned this random insert here, but on a previous episode that I was going to Europe in May, well, we finally finalized our itinerary and we leave in like 3 weeks. So for
nice.
Those of you who, well, it's actually, it's not even final. I think we actually know where we're going now. Travis, you'll be excited as you've gotten me interested in a few things that this country has to offer. Do I make you nervous by mentioning that? Do you have any guesses?
I'm going to guess, oh my goodness. I mean, I would just guess France, but you did that last year, so I'm going to go Norway?
Well, I mean, he did France, but it was like 18 hours.
Well, yeah, that trip counts. Well, I've done France. I've been to France a bunch of times. No, we're not doing France this time. Unless we swing through to restock and butter, which we might actually do.
Oh, I think I got it. Scotland.
No.
Oh.
No.
Well.
No. Well. You're going to Austria, man.
Oh.
Nice.
Okay. Go drink some Gruner.
You know. Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
How are you getting there?
Nothing exciting.
No.
American Airlines to Frankfurt in hoping that the Charlotte to Munich flight opens up last minute and I can swap because we're going to start in... Where are we starting? I forget at the moment. Near Munich and then making our way over to Vienna. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah.
So you said nothing exciting. Are you
American
economy?
Airlines.
Is it?
No. It's...
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
I was worried for a second there.
Yeah. No.
It's like,
obviously business is just American Airlines. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I was blanking. We're starting in Salzburg. So, and then making our way over to Vienna. But hopefully going to drink some Gruner and other fine Austrian wines. The lead in on this was that Travis has really gotten me into Austrian wines as he's the most qualified wine person of the four of us. And
yeah,
I've gotten hooked on them. So it's becoming summer-ish, which is perfect for some of the Austrian whites.
And the secondary layer to that is for the folks who occasionally say, oh, you guys sound like you're out of touch from Points and Miles. Matt is doing a completely unexciting business class flight to Europe that most people would be thrilled about. But it's not even worth mentioning,
Touché.
I guess, on the
Touché.
Pod. So
right.
And
we're doing Finnair Home, though, so that'll be fun. Oh, I love that product. So, yeah.
Is that the one where, like, the seat doesn't actually, like, recline? There's, like, a...
Yep. It's like a couch, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
awesome. The best shoulder space of any business class seat in the sky.
I was like,
well,
article coming
some of the
soon.
Some of the Japanese ones might take the cake.
ANA's pretty nice on their new
Yeah.
I haven't done Finnair. I'll let you know because I'm flying it back. I think I'm flying it back from Ireland.
Nice.
Late summer. So
yeah.
I'll do a comparison for you, Matt.
I'll put it this way. For a more traditional business class where you're in like a pod and not like a fully enclosed suite or whatever, I think it's probably got the most shoulder space because it's not an actual like seat. It's just kind of like a couch thing.
I need to look at a picture of this now.
It's pretty, we'll put one
I
in here.
I can't envision it.
Yeah, we'll put one in here.
We're going to need to see the dimensions of your shoulders, too.
Yeah.
Everything I've read about it is people either love it or hate it. And there's really no in between.
Yep. Agreed. So,
well, if you are new to the world of Points and Miles, and by that I mean you are excited by flying business class on American Airlines to Europe, or if you just need a refresher, be sure to check out episodes 1 through 6 of this show for some of the basic fundamentals of Points and Miles. to help get you to a point where business class over the Atlantic is unexciting. It's a great spot to be. And also a quick reminder to join our 10X Travel Insiders Facebook group that is the largest points and miles Facebook group on earth, now at over 385,000 members who will soon be debating the best shoulder space products in points and miles. Today's episode, other than what we've talked about so far, will not cover anything with shoulder space or those types of redemptions. We're actually going to be focusing on airport lounges. This is a very common topic that is asked about from our readers. We're going to talk about different lounge types, how to access them, the best lounges we visited, the things to look for that make a lounge good or not so good, and how you can use our new My10X lounge finder to level up your lounge game and make finding and accessing this lounge much, much easier for your upcoming summer trips and beyond. We'll also be talking some fun anecdotes and horror stories from lounges around the world based on our experiences, some hidden perks in lounges that you might not know about, and just generally all things to know about lounges. So with that said, any more shoulders conversation? Are we ready to dive in?
I got plenty of shoulder space right here. Let's go.
I'm gonna go ahead and
allow me to shoulder the first part of this episode, where I'm gonna talk about what are airport lounges and why should you care? So why airport lounges matter? They are spaces that just make airports more comfortable in about every single way. Airport lounges are spaces that are open for anyone who's able to get access to them, that contain free food and drinks, comfortable seating, free fast Wi-Fi, sometimes showers, and at least in my opinion, most importantly, peace and quiet compared to the terminal. I am particularly a fan of when lounges are like on an elevated floor with glass so you can look down at all the non-lounge people. And be like, haha, I'm sitting here in the lounge and you are not.
Out of touch?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did we say out of touch? Yes. Find a window seat. Watch those people paying $30 for, two sandwiches and two drinks and pat yourself on the back, assuming you can reach over those giant shoulders of yours.
This shows how long it's been since Bryce has probably had to buy a sandwich and drinks at the airport, because I've got a feeling you can't do that for $30 anymore.
No.
You can't do that for $30, especially when, as a family traveler, you are going with five people.
Yeah.
So,
well,
yeah.
I have the debate often, being in the Denver airport. One of the lounges we go to often is one of the bank lounges, and you have to pay for your extra guest. I think it's like $50. So I always have the debate of like, am I going to get $50 worth of this lounge visit, or should I just go get an airport beer and a sandwich? But that's probably going to be more than $50 now for two people. I don't know.
And then you like obligate yourself to like go get a second beer in the lounge just to justify
get your
it,
money's
right?
worth.
It's like the buffet mindset.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So so who can access lounges? Number one, anyone who's a guest of Emily and willing to give $50. number two is premium cabin travelers, although not always. And I would actually even go further to say, and less often than most people would think, on many international premium cabin tickets, you're going to get it. But there are a large number of folks who find out the hard way that this often doesn't apply to domestic travel or even travel to international destinations that are within the North American region, if you will. So that is not as reliable as it used to be and as most think. You get elite status holders with the airlines, perhaps most applicable to us, credit card holders with cards that have lounge perks. These tend to be cards that have the higher annual fees and all sorts of other perks that come with them. And last but not least, you have paid lounge memberships, whether you pay an annual membership or you can often buy day passes to visit some of these lounges as well, or just maybe hang out outside of one, look for the friendliest person who's flashing a fancy bank card that has access and be like, hey, here's $50. Please take me in. There are a few different types of lounges that you should be aware of. First, perhaps most common is airline operated lounges. These are the ones that have airline names attached to them. This is your United Clubs, Delta Sky Clubs, American Airlines Admirals Clubs. These tend to be most common in the hubs that you would have these airlines operating out of, but you'll find them in pretty much most airports other than my home one of Columbus. Widespread, and at least in my experience, pretty common from one to the next. Next one, you have the premium international lounges. These are the lounges you'll find in major like international gateway cities. We're talking like the Emirates First Lounges, the Singapore Airlines Private Room, Qatar Al Marjan Lounge. These are the step up from most others that you'll find, but of course, there's not nearly as many of those around the world. You have the credit card lounges that Emily kind of referred to earlier. These ones are attached to bank names that you might be familiar with. I don't know about y'all, but it seems like there's been an explosion of these in the last like 2 to 3 years, like just a new one opening every month or so. Mm-hmm. We're seeing a lot of those all around it, and accessing them is typically included with a premium card membership. And then last but not least, but actually maybe least, you have the independent
least
lounges.
Memorable.
Least memorable, probably lowest quality, most crowded. These are like your Priority Pass lounges, Plaza Premium, like the club at insert your airport code here, These will tend to have different affiliations with lounge membership programs, and at least in my experience, have gone downhill somewhat quickly in the same time that banks have been kind of stepping in and building their own, but still better than Chili's to go. So worth discussing.
I don't know, man.
But
notice you said Chili's and not Outback. Big Bloomin' Onion fans at the airport, maybe.
I don't think I've ever been to an Outback in an airport.
I bet if you eat a whole Bloomin' Onion before your next flight, your whoever's sitting next to you will be so grateful that you did that.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah. Precisely. Mm-hmm. I say that, and I've never had a Bloomin' Onion in my entire life, so.
Wow.
I don't really plan on changing it, but, you know.
Outback Steakhouse, you could be our first sponsor, so send us some Bloomin' Onion gift cards.
Yeah, they spent it all on that bowl sponsorship, man. No money left over.
At one of my first jobs, I used to work on a marketing team that supported a NASCAR team. And anytime the driver won, you could go get a free Bloomin' Onion.
Yep.
And I took advantage of that a lot, making nothing in New York City. I would just go grab a Bloomin' Onion for, I don't know, two meals.
I would say that's like hilarious. A couple days of food.
Yeah.
Next, we're going to talk about our best and worst lounge experiences, kind of some real world experiences that each of us have had. Let's start with the positive best lounges we've ever visited. Emily, you're up first.
I feel like my breadth of experience here is not as deep as some of yours. So I'm really just pulling this out of nowhere. But I did enjoy the Lufthansa Business Lounge in Munich. I had a very long layover there. We went out and explored Munich and came back and had probably like a couple hours before we continued on to Lisbon, and it was completely empty. It was really quiet. There were showers. There was a buffet. I mean, a lot of the things that, like, you know, they're fine. But at the time, I think that was like one of my first lounge experiences. So I still remember it fondly.
I feel like that's a common theme with lounges. Like the first lounge you visit, even if it isn't fantastic after trying many of them, always feels incredible.
Yeah.
And then eventually you get to a point like us where we're like, that one, I don't know, maybe go to Outback. But
yeah. Well, I was looking up reviews of it to try and jog my memory before we recorded this. And I found some article on it and all the comments were like, worst lounge ever. So maybe I'm just completely misremembering it, but That was nice to have a quiet place to sit after sleepily walking around Munich after a red eye.
Yeah, in those experiences too, it always feels like the lounge becomes a competition of like, what furniture will I tolerate sleeping on?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's almost like a college library where it's like you can get creative and put stuff together and like, works.
Yep.
I'm similar to you in that I haven't flown a ton of the Middle Eastern or Asian airlines, and the ones that I have flown have not been through hubs, so I don't have a ton of the mega lounges, like I'm sure we'll hear from the other folks. But I'm going to get super specific. I think my most memorable lounge experience was a shower at the Lufthansa Senator Lounge in Frankfurt. And I mentioned I'm flying through Frankfurt in a couple weeks, and I'm really sad that I'm flying American Airlines because I won't have the option to access it anymore. I also don't have Star Alliance Gold anymore, which is how I got in. But when I tell you that it's like taking a shower under a fire hydrant, I'm not kidding. It is the most incredible water pressure I've ever experienced, potentially irregardless of a lounge, just in general.
Wow.
It was incredible after an overnight flight. And just also, if you don't travel, if you don't shower on layovers or just in transit, either before you get on a flight and or after, you are completely missing out on a revolutionary flight experience. You need to do that, specifically in the Senator Lounge in Frankfurt.
Yeah, the good old arrival shower, I feel like, knocks out at least like 35% of your jet lag.
Absolutely.
Immediately, especially with good water pressure.
Yes.
I think now we need to do an episode where we get a fire hose and spray Matt so that way we can really know how well this conversation holds up. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow we're back to the old shtick of Matt and showers.
So I walked into that one. Really walked into that one.
Yep.
Yeah. So we got a couple of votes here for lounges in Germany, but Travis, we are apparently in the, what did Matt call it? The elite lounge club here. So take us a step up. What's your best lounge experience?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to take us away from Frankfurt.
I was in Munich. They're different.
Sorry. I'll take us away from Germany. I'll take us away from Germany, even though like the first class terminal in Frankfurt is decent. Sorry, I just had to flex on the business class flyers.
Don't be overlooking the rubber ducky you get.
Perfect for the shower.
Where is the ducky?
Yeah, back to the shower.
I've got it right up here.
Oh, there you go.
Look
perfect.
At that.
Yeah. No, my favorite lounge, if I had to narrow it down to one, it's Cathay Pacific, the Pier in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Although I would just say Cathay Pacific's lounges in Hong Kong as a whole. There's so many of them. So if you have a longer layover, you can hop from one to one. But the Pier, whereas Bryce said some comment about being higher up so you can look down on people.
No.
If I remember correctly, it's underground. So you're really isolated from the noise of the terminal. There's plenty of food. There's a full sit-down restaurant, places to relax, a bar. There's little nap rooms that like overlook the tarmac. So whether you want to nap or just do some plane spotting to get somewhere even more quiet, you can go there. I don't know if they're still doing it because it has been a few years, but there even was a spa and you could get a complimentary 15-minute treatment, like a like a chair massage, or I think I got like, I think it was like a miniature pedicure where they like washed my feet and stuff for me. Super nice.
You got to make sure your feet are clean before you go barefoot on the plane, right?
Isn't exactly.
That's you that likes to do that, isn't it, Travis?
Well, they have to wash off like the mess from the bulkhead when you put your bare feet up on it, right? Like,
yeah. You know, I'm helping the airlines clean their planes, so.
Yes.
Is that the one with the bathtubs too? Where you can go take a bath, or is that one of the? I know one of them at Hong Kong has it. I don't remember if it's the Pier, the Wing, or one of the other ones.
I honestly do not remember, but that's really nice. You don't have to worry about the water pressure. It is one of the biggest bathtubs you can imagine, and you can just take a huge bubble bath in this little private.
I don't know if I
room.
Need to.
There's a few of them.
Leave the airport, let alone this lounge.
No, yeah, you book like an 18-hour layover for sure.
I legitimately have done, I think, about a 12-hour layover in the Hong Kong airport.
In the tub.
Doing the different Cathay Pacific lounges and thoroughly enjoyed it and would be happy to do it again.
All you can eat sushi, if I remember, at least at one of them, like a high-end type sushi bar. Good, that's a good one.
They're nice. So the Cathay Pacific lounges in Hong Kong as a whole, but the Pier was definitely my favorite, even if it's not the one with the tubs. You can go take a bath and then hop over to the Pier.
Is this when you flew to Vietnam for a weekend?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Just had to get that in there. So
I've been there three times now. So once was to the Maldives, once was from the Maldives, and once was to Vietnam for a weekend.
Normal stuff.
Yeah. I'll take a lot of weekend trips around here, apparently.
Yeah, Emily and I are the only ones on this pod that have not done like a international trip in which we spent less time on the ground than in the air.
Yeah.
But we got French butter Matt and Travis in the lounge, and we can't compete with that.
The bathtub specifically.
Yes.
Yeah.
Travis in the bathtub episode title right there.
Travis in a tub.
I'll round it out. Best lounge experience for me, two of them in the same airport in Doha. The Al Marjan is the business class lounge that you get access to. I'm flying on Qatar. I was flying Q Suites there, which that alone, I guess that was the best lounge I'd ever visited in my life for about an hour until I went to the other one I'm going to mention. But Al Marjan Lounge is maybe the biggest lounge I've ever seen or heard of anywhere on earth. I think it might actually be bigger than the entire Columbus airport. You could hold hundreds, maybe thousands of people in there. Just huge ceilings, tons of seating space, multiple restaurants to choose from, multiple bars. It was incredible. And you know, that came with access on our Q Suites tickets booked on points. But there's actually a second lounge there in Doha, the Al Safwa Lounge, which is the first class version. And at least at the time when I was there, you could pay like $100 per person to upgrade from the business to the first class lounge. I learned this on the internet while sitting in the business class lounge. So I was like, Alexander, pick up your stuff. We got to go.
This is not enough for me. We got to go find
something. Somehow there's going to be a better lounge. So if I had to answer a single lounge, it's Al Safwa. Also massive, also multiple restaurants to choose from, but everything just kind of a step up from the business class lounge there. White tablecloth dining, super high-end expensive champagne. They actually have like this little miniature like hotel in there that kind of blurs the line between like a nap room and a hotel room where you can actually reserve it for a period of time.
Okay.
Like they have sheets on the bed. It has a private bathroom right there in the suite. I napped for like a couple hours. It was incredible. And maybe the crown jewel is the water feature in the lounge. They have like a falling water feature. I think kind of like LaGuardia's one that most people are familiar with. But the ceiling is like, I don't know, 100 feet high. It's just insane. and totally quiet, beautiful. Now I want to go back.
Yeah, but how's the water pressure?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I was trying it out from 100-foot fall, and that's when I had to leave the lounge. They escorted me out, you know. But
you know, a really interesting way, if you want to access it as well, I'd have to double check the lounge entrance rules. But I learned this last time I went to Egypt, which was 2 or 3 years ago. So full disclosure, this might have changed by then or since then. But flights within the Middle East, they market them like here in the U.S. There's only first and economy. So my flight to Cairo had first and economy. I was unfortunately in economy and hoping that it bumped up. But so if you're flying Q Suites to Doha and then connecting generally within the region, you'll book first class for that domestic leg, but it'll price out as a business class ticket. But since that domestic, that's a bad way of putting it, that regional leg is in first class, you can get access to the Al Safwa lounge that way as well.
That's still a thing. That's pretty awesome. Good little loophole.
Yeah.
And now that makes me think that like someone should open a sarcastic like business class lounge in Europe where you just sit in the terminal and they block off every other seat with a little rope. if you get that joke, you are one of us and I appreciate you. But let's flip the script here. Let's talk about our worst lounge experiences and lounge horror stories, other than from all these fancy ones, which I guess we should quickly say that all of our examples, we were able to access those lounges from our actual ticket that we booked. All were booked on points. I guess I'm looking for nods. I'm quite sure all were booked on points. Yeah. None of them had anything to do with like lounge memberships or premium cards that we had. That was just
mine,
kind of attached.
Mine was technically a status thing at the time. I got in when I had Star Alliance Gold.
Okay.
I was flying Star Alliance, but my flight did not give me access during transit.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. So one minor exception to that, but that I would imagine that for most people, when they're sharing like the best lounge I've ever been to, it would be under that same circumstance. These are an entire tier that are above the ones that are a little bit more common or would have memberships. These are the cream of the crop. But let's talk about whatever the opposite of the cream of the crop is. Worst lounge experiences, lounge horror stories. Travis, let's start with you. What is the worst lounge that you've ever visited?
Yeah, this one was a little tough for me. I have a little rant that, you know, in general, any lounge that I have to wait in line to get in is probably one that I'm not super excited for, where there's a line or it's going to take you more than half an hour. I'll say that my idea of what makes like a worst lounge experience or a horror lounge experience might differ from other people. You know, a lot of people think a small lounge or not a lot of good food. But when I was really thinking about this, to me, what really makes the difference for a good lounge versus a bad lounge is less the amenities and more just the quality of the service. There's a Priority Pass lounge in Cozumel that is really small, maybe holds like 15 people. They serve sandwiches and hot dogs, but it does not look exciting at all, but the people there are so nice. The service is always great. I think if you just saw pictures, you might think it's one of the worst lounges, but the service absolutely makes up for it versus lounges where there's poor service or even worse, doesn't have air conditioning and it's in a hot part of the world, which I have experienced, are what kind of makes for, in my opinion, bad lounge experiences. I'm going to a lounge to be comfortable. And so if I go there and I'm not comfortable, then why am I there? But if I had to point to one lounge that came to mind, and this is, there's been a number of Priority Pass ones or Plaza Premium ones that I just can't remember. But the one that comes to mind was the Sri Lankan lounge in Colombo. It was warm and hot, and I know that there's a cultural difference in temperature preferences there, so I get that. I just wasn't very comfortable. The food was not very great. It was just not a relaxing experience, is really what it comes down to. I wasn't happier to be in the lounge than to not be in the lounge.
Gotcha. Yeah,
that's a fair assessment.
Yeah. Matt, what about you? Worst lounge experience ever.
I honestly don't have like a single just horror story from lounges. I often find myself just kind of disappointed with some lounges. You know, a lot of Priority Pass or Plaza Premium ones come to mind. Honestly, a ton of American Airlines, United, Delta, you know, Sky Clubs, all those, just except for the new sort of hub renovated ones. That's a different story. More often than not, I'm just annoyed and disappointed. But at the same time, I'm like, well, at least I'm not in the terminal. So, yeah. You know, it's like, yeah, the food might be meh. Yeah, service meh. Like, I'm with you on all that. But I'm in kind of a more comfortable chair, not, you know, huddled up at the gate with 300 of my closest friends waiting to take our flight. You know, it's at least separated. I can get food even if it's below par, things like that. So I haven't had one where I just, like, kind of like you were saying, would rather be in the terminal than not. But more often than not, I do just get into the lounge. I'm just kind of like, well, here we go again.
I think after I go here in a minute, it'll remind you of one that you might not care for, but we'll move on to Emily next. Emily, worst lounge experience.
Well, I was thinking it would be fun to just come in hot and say, like, the lounge in Columbus is terrible. There's always eggs there.
They're really good.
They are good deviled eggs, but that's such a weird thing to eat before you get on a plane.
Bloomin' onion.
I guess. My worst experience was actually at the Qantas First Lounge in L.A. I had access to it from my first class American Airlines ticket to Sydney, and they had a sit-down restaurant. I'd never been to a lounge with a sit-down restaurant before. I was all excited. And it was just some of the worst food that's ever been prepared, I think. I ordered a minute steak, which, to be fair, I don't really know what a minute steak is, and it was not good. It was super thin and overcooked. And then there were French fries that were also just, like, really thin and overcooked. Really sad. I was hyped up. I mean, obviously this was the beginning of my trip, so I was like, I'm not going to let this get me down. But we went back to the American Airlines Admirals Club. Ooh. And it was way better than the first lounge. I don't know what was going on, but when those are flip-flopped, I feel like that's not good.
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
For what it's worth, I just looked up a minute steak, and the first recipe says it takes an hour and 10 minutes. So I'm just really confused by what a minute steak's identity is trying to be.
Deception from the get-go.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you. But yeah, don't order one of those.
Yeah, for me, I have a couple to share. The one I initially wrote down was the Hawaiian Airlines Premier Club in Maui.
Ah, yeah.
And granted, this has been a couple of years. It might have been updated since then, but even still, I don't know. It felt like a large conference room that they installed a, like, fountain soda machine in and basically took the rest of the snacks from the airport cart or the airline cart and just dumped them out on the table.
The Hawaiian lounges are, actually, in, like Honolulu and stuff.
Enjoy your Diet Coke and, like, your pack of pretzels. That was, like, the extent of it. So I was very disappointed by that. But granted, that's a relatively small airport, and we were, you know, only just kind of connecting briefly. But that one was a real bummer. But the one that kind of came to mind right before we started recording here, and this is the one, Matt, I was referring to earlier, Gold Star Lounge in Athens.
I've been to this lounge.
Atrocious. Actually, I think that I texted you on the way in, and you, like, responded. You're like, don't get your hopes up.
Yeah.
So this lounge is, like, super out of the way of the terminal. It's, like, two floors up. It's shared by, like, six or seven different airlines. Like, there's a bunch of them that were under construction at the time. So it was massively overcrowded. I'm talking, like, literally there's no seats available. Like, people would walk in, do, like, the lap, like, when you're in, like, a happy hour or something. Be like, oh, look, there's literally no seats available. And then there's a line of people waiting. There's no bathroom in the lounge. You have to leave, walk across to where there's what was obviously not designed to be a bathroom, and they converted it. So there, I think there was, like, two toilets for men's and women's for a lounge that probably had 500 people in it. Always a wait there.
Good God.
The food was awful. There wasn't very much of it. I was not having a great time the entire time I was in there. Mm. And I hope it's improved, but that was not pleasant. We'll throw in a quick curveball here for you. Most overrated lounge, if anyone has any quick hot takes on this one, because I do feel like some degree of your lounge experience is set by your expectations. Like, I'm thinking of Emily's, you know, the worst lounge being the Qantas First Lounge. You probably had high expectations. This is an international carrier, first class lounge, and it was a real bummer. But does anyone have
Ironic thing about yours, Emily, is that, like, the Qantas First Lounge in Sydney is, like, very good and known for their food and wine options that they have there. But then the outstation is far from it.
I, I messed up by flying first out and business back. I should have flip-flopped it.
Anyone have an overrated lounge?
I mean, I've got a number of overrated lounges. The Frankfurt First Class Terminal. But that's not even the most overrated one. Like, the redeeming quality of that one is the drive to your plane.
Right.
That makes up for a lot. The one that I felt the way most overrated was the Concorde room, the British Airways Concorde room at London Heathrow. Yep. So many people hype this up. And I just didn't get it. The only thing that really made it seem a bit special was the memorabilia from the Concorde. But other than that, I didn't understand why, you know, I see some people on Instagram every time they're throwing up posts and being so excited. I just didn't get it. It just felt like a generic, nice business class lounge was a little bit more private because of restricted access. I didn't get it. I think people way blow it out of the water.
Well, that whole part of the airport with those lounges is very confusing to begin with, because there's like three or four British Airways lounges all like on top of each other, and you have to know which floor to go to, and then on the floor that the Concorde room's on, you have to know that you can turn right to go here or left. It's just, I found it super confusing, and they all kind of are the same at the end of the day.
Yeah, I had to ask for directions like three or four times.
Yeah,
don't get me wrong, I pick it over the BA business class lounges, but in terms of ones that people really hype up, that I don't get, that was the one that stood out the most to me.
I feel like I do need to give another shout out to the idea of like lounge expectations changing over time. Cause I'm sure if I went through like all my old Instagram stories from like 10 years ago, there's a lot of pictures of pretty mediocre business class lounges in which I thought I was balling out. So an acknowledgement to the many of you who again are sitting there like, oh, you know, business class flight on AA to Europe is just ho-hum and this lounge is ho-hum. We were all, I mean, at least I was there. I'm sure all of us were all there. We're like, that was super exciting at the time. And like, we don't mean to diminish that at all. That is super exciting as you kind of get into lounges, but you will start to learn that there are more to get your best and worst experiences at. I'll throw in a quick overrated one that came to mind for me. Virgin Atlantic Clubhouse at Dulles. Have any of you ever been there before?
No.
Yeah.
Well, there's that. It's that, and similar to that is the Turkish Airlines one there too.
Yeah. I thought Turkish was better.
Yeah,
actually, and I have good experience because I was at a lengthy delay at Dulles, and Dulles had at the time like 8 or 9 priority pass participating lounges. So I visited all of them.
Tried them all. Yeah, why not?
Yeah, I went lounge hopping for like 6 hours. Shout out to the sleep pods there too that were participating at the time in priority pass. You could just get like 30 minutes free or whatever.
Those were nice.
That was
the
nice.
Minute suites.
Yeah, this wasn't even minute suites. They were like,
or is it an hour and 10 minute suite?
Yeah, no, these things look like little like literal pods. They almost look like those like massage, like Aqua massage pods that used to be in every mall.
Yeah,
you just like climb in and like close the door, and it's super tiny. But the Virgin Atlantic Clubhouse, I feel like was pretty hyped up, and I walked in there, and it was just meh was the word that came to mind. The food was meh, the space was meh, the service was meh. It was just all, and the only thing that was like a little bit cool was maybe the furniture. Like they had that kind of 70s, 80s Euro type vibe going on there, but otherwise, highly overrated. I would skip, and I would even go to the Turkish lounge over that one, candidly, assuming you can get in. So those are best lounges, worst lounges, most overrated lounges. You heard quite a bit here. Next, let's talk about how to get lounge access without flying first class. First, most commonly for the folks here who are listening, credit cards with lounge memberships. Seems like most banks, I wouldn't say all, but most banks have at least one super premium card that comes with unlimited lounge access just for being a cardholder. You tend to know that this is the case because the card's gonna have an annual fee of $450 or higher. Like if it doesn't, you probably don't have lounge access. Some of these cards will give you lounge access for like authorized users or allow you to have like one or two guests for free. Others will charge you a smallish fee, $50 or so per guest that you bring. But just simply having the card gets you access into those lounges. And that's probably the most common way that our readers access lounges, and I'd say even the folks on this call, pod, do as well.
One really important thing to know on that is any co-branded cards that give you lounge access, it doesn't mean this is a big caveat, doesn't mean you can go anytime. You have to be flying that airline or sometimes within their alliance to access it. So if you're looking for a card with lounge access, just be sure you understand if you're thinking of getting an airline's card that offers lounge access, it's, you can't go into the Admiral's Club because you have a membership if you're flying Spirit. You still have to be flying American Airlines. So just know of that little caveat if you're leaning towards one of the airline co-branded cards that provides lounge access.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that wasn't always the case, right? Like, at least from when I was early in this hobby, it was just kind of like, you could just show up no matter what.
The last five or six years, that's changed pretty much across the board,
Yeah, which really, in my mind, makes those kind of like super premium airline cards that come with lounge membership a lot less valuable relative to like the bank cards that offer that as well. Because those ones, it does not matter who you're flying. Those are almost, it seems like almost as common as true like airline lounges, especially if you're flying through airports that aren't like Columbus, Ohio. So, you know, if you're sitting out there holding a super premium airline card for the lounge membership, it might be a time to look at some of the other bank options because it's probably a better fit overall. But I will say, like, from kind of doing this for years and engaging with many readers, this is one of those many situations of the hobby that most people look at these super premium cards, they see the sticker price, and they're like, no chance. Like, even if it comes with lounge access, like, no chance. But the common path that we see folks follow is one that we've kind of alluded to throughout this episode so far. It's like, I don't know about lounges. Like, I'm just comfortable going to the gate. But then you try one, and then you're like, okay, like, how do I get more of that? And suddenly that value seems to become a lot more clear. And then you find yourself, like, taking the train three terminals away on a 90-minute layover just to go into the lounge for 12 minutes.
Yes.
Oh, you're talking about Orlando?
Yeah. Well, I've done that. Yeah. Got some horror stories about that one.
Yeah.
That is me. I also love the, some of the bank lounges now have like a grab and go area, and some are better than others. But if I don't have a ton of time, but I still want to take advantage of the free food and drink in the lounge, just grab a sandwich and a salad from the to-go area, grab a coffee if you want, and then I get back on the train in the Denver airport and go to my real terminal.
I feel like that's a pretty competitive advantage compared to some of the other legacy ones, and some of them have kind of forced other ones into doing it. It's still real slow uptake, but yeah, that's a pretty good feature where they're just basically like, hey, you know what? We're just going to feed you. Like, we know what you want. Here's some great options for you. That's pretty good.
And the food,
especially like we were talking about earlier in the episode, where two people can't eat for less than like $50 at an airport.
Yeah,
you can just go get the food, not pay anything, and go eat at your gate, even if you don't want to go in the lounge.
Yep.
Yeah, and it, most of those bank lounges, they tend to be pretty new because we've seen such an aggressive build out by multiple banks in that space. And I would say, like, on average, they are kind of in a tier above most of the airline lounges that you see now. So this isn't quite an apples to apples comparison. In most cases, if I have options, I'm going to bank lounge over airline lounge all day, especially if they have kind of grab and go. But that's credit cards and getting you into lounges. That's your most common way of accessing them. Next up, though, is Priority Pass, or I guess I'd say lounge memberships like this in general. You can buy a Priority Pass membership. It's about $470 a year. But this is actually included with a number of the premium bank cards that offer lounge access. You know, you might be able to access that bank's branded lounges as well as have a membership in Priority Pass. But as we've kind of alluded to a few times throughout the show already, at least from my standpoint, Priority Pass lounges have gone downhill considerably. In the last like 18 months, they had a huge explosion in terms of the number of lounges you could access. It seemed like any airport restaurant could just kind of sign up and be like, we're part of this now. And what you ended up with was a ton of super overcrowded lounges, even like denying entry for folks who had like the ability to access that lounge. They're really small. They don't tend to be nearly as good as any of the other types of lounges that we've talked about, but they are still better than the terminal, and I will still go into one if that is my only option.
Well, they used to have the restaurant credit, right? Which was a big reason people liked those.
Shout out to the Timberline Grill.
Yeah, in Denver.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
How much did you get? It was like $29 with credit or something.
Per
20
person.
$20 like a person.
Yeah. Per person, yeah.
Up to like four guests, and then,
So you can have like half a beer and like a French fry.
Like, no offense, but who was the actuary that did the forecasting on that? Like, that math just did not ever math for me, but I took advantage of it.
Yeah.
There was one in Houston, too, where they would happily let you start two tabs. So Marie and I would go.
Of course.
I would start one, so we get two for mine, and she would start one and get two from her. So we would get over $100 every time we went.
Well, and of course, Priority Pass outside of the U.S. is exceptional, like... There were a ton of places. It was actually a thing when we were in Australia. So we flew a bunch while we were in Australia, and there were four of us. And so we would get like $100 worth of stuff pretty much every couple days for like a month. It was kind of wild.
And I guess another kind of side use of Priority Pass that I've seen Matt use individually is the sometimes they pair with like the spas, like the Be Relaxed Spa or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
You get like $25 off a service. Yeah, Express Spa. Yeah. So you can hop in there and basically get like a half price treatment. Worth doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You take your shower in the lounge and then you go out and grab a quick massage at the Express Spa. It's perfect.
Yeah, I think we got like, you and I got foot massages in the Vegas airport, Matt.
Yep. Well, that's what everybody else does in Vegas, right?
Yeah, right? Yeah.
The only thing worse about those is that you're very exposed to the terminal. So like you're there having your moment of zen or whatever, and then just hundreds of your closest friends are just kind of walking past you.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I was tempted to take a picture Zen-like. Of you, and I did not. And now
I'm surprised you didn't, but no shame. Yeah. No shame.
Next up, we mentioned that you can get day passes to most lounges. They're typically about $50 to $75. There's actually, I don't know if we should say this, but there's some secondary markets for these things. I've seen like on eBay where you can hop in and buy passes from folks who have a few that they get each year. These are best for like long layovers where lounge access might not be worth the price, but lounges don't always allow day passes when it's overcrowded. So it's not something you can bank on every single time, but it is an option out there that's worth looking into. And last but not least, but definitely least applicable to our audience, is you have the elite status lounge access. You get like United, Golden Up, you know, Star Alliance lounge access on the international itineraries. Delta and American tend to have more restrictive access, often requiring an international business class ticket. But if you are a frequent traveler who has status, that does start to come up for you as an option to get into lounges.
One of the most annoying nuances on domestically, at least for the elite status lounge access, is if you earn Star Alliance Gold from United, it does not get you access into United Clubs. But if you earn Star Alliance Gold from any other Star Alliance carrier, you get access to United Clubs domestically.
What? Wow.
Yeah, it's wild.
Okay.
I will add something I learned recently about Star Alliance. Is Star Alliance actually operates some of their own lounges. So the Alliance has a handful of lounges across the world. And it's at airports where it's not really a hub for any single Star Alliance member, but a number of them fly there. So we used it in Buenos Aires. Number of Star Alliance airlines fly there. It's not really a hub for anyone. So Star Alliance has an independent lounge that Star Alliance Gold let us access. That was pretty good.
Yeah.
It was pretty good too.
Nice.
Yeah. I think at this point it might be good to weave in our tool that helps you find the best lounges to utilize. We just launched Lounge Finder within My10X. This helps to make this whole process of shopping around for what lounges you can access a lot easier. So I guess I'll give the floor here to Matt for a quick walkthrough of kind of how that works and how maybe you've utilized the tool yourself.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. You can punch in an airport code or the name or whatever, see what lounges exist at the airport that you're flying through or from or wherever, and then you can kind of filter down based on, you know, terminal location. You can see it on a map, so it can kind of help you out with route planning, you know, where if you know what terminal you're flying into and all that stuff, see all their hours, pictures for most of them, all the amenities. You can see which ones have good showers and which ones don't have showers at all.
Is there a water pressure tracker?
No, we don't have a water pressure filter.
I'd like to submit a feature request.
Yeah, we'd have to send Travis on a lot of Southwest flights to go test water pressure in airports around the world, but... it's just kind of helpful. Just you have to be able to see. We also have a what we call the Trip Wizard, where you can literally put in a lot of your ticket information. It takes a couple steps, but you know, you put in your each leg of your ticket that you have. So your point of origin, your destination, what airline you're flying in, the cabin that you have, and it will help you essentially plan your layovers by saying, "Hey, while you're in London, you literally have access to these three lounges because of the ticket you have booked." Regardless of your elite status, you can add those in as well if you have Priority Pass or other memberships or credit cards or you know, frequent flyer status, those kinds of things. So it can be helpful too. It's more complex to set up, so up to you on whether or not you want to use it, but it is pretty handy to be able to literally get a concrete answer as to what your access will be.
I actually just used Lounge Finder for my trip to Antarctica. We had to fly.
Do we have a lounge in Antarctica?
Yeah.
No. For one of my flights on my trip to Antarctica in Buenos Aires, there's two airports, and I was flying out of AEP, which is not the the one that most people are familiar with for a domestic flight. Aerolínea Sorrentina operates a number of flights from AEP, and I was hoping to find a lounge because the air conditioning was out in the terminal, and sure enough, it told me right where one was, and it was three steps down from my gate. So super helpful.
We have geolocation too, apparently. Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, So super, super nice and helpful, especially those times when you don't necessarily think about it in advance. I know I sometimes, spoiled traveler, but take lounge access for granted. So it was really nice to help me out in a pinch.
Nice. Awesome. Well, and of course, a fan favorite in this space for a long time was Lounge Buddy, but it got bought a few years ago and was sunset last year, I think, whatever. Not too long ago. So that's kind of the motivation to build something to help replace it, which was what we were trying to do. And hopefully it's a helpful resource. If you haven't used it, give it a shot.
Yeah, so I hear almost every reader call I have, and just anecdotally, it's being used by a ton of our readers. They love it. I'm one of those users who loves it. It feels like a lot of times when you're looking at, like, especially like a hub airport that has a ton of lounges, like trying to demystify which one you can access is like trying to interpret those like parking signs in major cities where there's like eight layers, and it's like, if it's a full moon between 2 and 5 and you have permit A, B, or D, you can park here for 92 minutes. You know, it's like, wait, what? Like, this just makes it so easy. It's my go-to tool now for lounge access. A couple more quick topics here as we're kind of wrapping up. First, kind of high level, interested in your takes on what makes for a good lounge as people are kind of looking through and demystifying it and hopefully evaluating many options that they have due to their credit cards. You know, Emily and Travis, what do you look for in a lounge that makes it good?
I mean, normally seated dining, but I have not had a good experience with that yet. So
I agree with Emily though. Like seated dining, it's a good litmus test. Generally, the food's going to be better somewhere that offers seated dining than just a buffet. A lot of the ones that offer seated dining also offer a buffet, which is nice. But if there's a menu I can order from, it's likely going to be better unless I see minute steak on it.
I'll throw in one for me. I as a family traveler, I'm often looking for lounges that have like divided spaces. Like there's nothing more scary, I think, to family traveler than like one big lounge without walls. It's nice and quiet. Everyone's peaceful. And I roll in there with my young kids. And I'm like, sorry, but we're those people right now. But there is one particular brand of popular bank lounges that most of them have like a dedicated family room. It looks like a little playroom. They usually have like cartoons on TV, little toys around. But most importantly, it's its own like private room. So you don't have to worry about, you know, interrupting other people's peace and quiet with your kids. It's just a great place to hang out.
Yeah. I mean, I also just, big thing for me, just have enough space for everyone. And that doesn't mean just having a line. It means where I can sit somewhere and not feel just completely crowded. Sitting somewhere and other people aren't nearby, it sounds like a small thing, but especially if you're jet lagged and tired, it makes a difference to just kind of have your own space.
Yeah, yes, comfortable seating space, good food, great bathrooms, preferably a shower if possible. Obviously, power outlets can be a huge thing. Some lounges get that well, some don't. That can be a real problem.
Yeah.
If you don't have if you have great seating but not a lot of power outlets, that'll cause a problem real quickly.
Delicious cookies. That's a big one for me. Like a little salted caramel chocolate chip cookie. I will take one to go. Thank you.
Just one?
What?
Salted caramel or what'd you say? Salted caramel or salted chocolate chip?
Salted caramel chocolate chip. Double up.
Yes.
Oh, just drop the caramel and you got me.
Thank you. I don't like caramel. Yeah.
Okay. Mm. Now we know.
We'll save that one for the opening of next show. So to kind of wrap it up here on lounge access, is lounge access essential for travel? No. But maybe. I mean, it feels like it sometimes, right? But if you do use it right, it can be a total game changer. It makes that entire trip experience to or from your destination just so much more comfortable, and you don't really dread it nearly as much as you would if you're just kind of stuck in the terminal. We're curious to hear your takes in the comments here in our Facebook group. What are some of the best lounges you visited? Worst lounges, horror stories, most overrated? And what do you think of our, you know, out of touch advice? I'm doing the quotes here on YouTube about our own opinions. We want to hear it. Yeah, we're not out of touch.
Where do you think we come across as out of touch today?
It started with the shoulder room and ended with the minute steak. But yeah, pretty much from the jump. But we acknowledge it, and we have many resources to help you become out of touch in a good way. We're being kind of sarcastic here. But to get you to that level of travel where your expectation is high enough that you can kind of parse through these things. So a few different ways that you can do that for yourself. First, sign up for our free tool, My10X, one single place to manage all your cards, points, miles. Look at lounge options. Just make all of the points and miles game on easy mode and elevate your travel to that level that we're talking about today. Check out our Facebook group, 10X Travel Insiders. You can just search that on Facebook. Come join, talk about your best or worst lounge stories. Of course, our website, 10xtravel.com. You can read all about lounges, credit card updates, what's going on in the points and miles space, kind of stay up to date with what's happening. And this podcast, take a moment, give us 5 stars, give us a review, share it with a friend. If they've never listened, maybe don't make this the first episode because they're going to be, those guys are really out of touch. But they'll get to it. You'll see them in a lounge in the future and they will thank you for it. So for all of us at 10X Travel, this has been Takeoff, a Points and Miles podcast. We appreciate you listening today and we will see you on the next show or in a lounge. Bye now.
Bye.